Welcome to the Deli Pod. I know I always sound excited about this week's special guest, but I really am. You can guess who he is because there's subtle clues in the background which says AJ Roberts Show. AJ, I can see that you're much more, well, I know you're a kind of podcasting legend and you're much more experienced at this game than I am. And you're probably better at monetizing and shit. And I'm sure you're way better at production. Anyway, it was really good to meet you at the Hope Festival. The Hope Freedom Festival. How good was that?
Yeah. It was a really good day. And obviously, I've seen you at the Preds the evening do as well the other night briefly.
Yeah.
For the book launch of the Right Said Fleds.
Yeah, that was good. Oh, did I not? Or did I actually not meet? Was that a false memory? Were you not at the Hope? I did meet you there, didn't I?
No. You hope to meet me there.
Well, yeah.
So you've jumped timelines here, James. Yeah, you've jumped timelines here, James, without knowing it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, you're right. The two thoughts in my... I know that people at... Okay, I know people at the Hope Freedom Festival were saying, you've got to get AJ Roberts on your pod. And so I sort of...
Yeah, conflated. And then we met.
Yeah, I conflated the two things. Anyway, to make contact with you online. And I wanted to talk to you. Because I know that you're gonna know this stuff because you're ex-military. You've been around the block. You've been in Iraq and Afghanistan, and also you're well in touch with the kind of awake community. And I'm kind of hoping that you're going to give me a message of cheer because I've just spent this morning doing a podcast with Ole Damagjord, who's been fantastic on just how enormous, mind-blowingly enormous the global conspiracy is to turn us into underlings and stuff. But
yeah,
sometimes when you realize the scale of the problem, you can fall into despair. And I think that you maybe have a message of hope. I mean, are people waking up?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this isn't just from, you know, podcasts and stuff like that. That, you know, this is at a real deeper level. And you know, if people can wrap their head around that, this is the biggest spiritual war that we've ever could have imagined being in. And I'd say that as somebody who wasn't spiritual, you know, especially in the military, like even if you started speaking about stuff like that, you'd be looked at like you're a lunatic and you did know you'd go see the doctor for a pharmaceutical. So it's come from that kind of aspect. But like deep down, you know, this whole agenda has been a massive attack on the human consciousness and our ability to, or innate ability to work out just how powerful we actually are as human beings. So the whole idea has been to suppress us in a massive way, you know, from birth, everything from the minute you come out of the womb, you know, just vitamin K jab, cut the cord early, you know, all of that whole process, your birth certificate, et cetera,
et cetera. I said to my mum,
it's just, you know,
I've been waking up my mother and she's pretty on board with the program because all three of her children are all completely down the rabbit hole, so she hasn't got much choice. And I said to her, Mark, if I could go back in time, Mark, I would have to have a word in your ear and say, Mummy, please don't vaccinate me. I would have avoided so much shit. I wouldn't have my hay fever. I wouldn't have had that irritable bowel syndrome, which plagued me when I was a child. I had all kinds of health conditions. I probably, you know, it probably made me more susceptible to the Lyme disease I got now, you know. And she said, I'm sorry, darling, we just didn't know any better. There it is.
Yeah, no, it's the same for me, same for my kids. And definitely the same being in the military. You know, you're literally like a guinea pig and just jabbed up to the eyeballs. And I mean, I had anthrax jabs and that was horrendous prior to going to Iraq. And you know, so many people are really ill as well. And I remember it clear as day, horrible, horrible feeling. But I know there's obviously an open inquiry that's happening right now. I think it's Justice for Veterans. And I think there's 32,000 troops that are basically looking at being compensated for damages caused by these anthrax jabs. I think they're from five nations. But yeah, it's interesting to see who owned the company or who were the biggest shareholders in the company who made the anthrax jabs in the first place. So, you know, it all comes back to money and families, bloodlines. No, it was the Bushes and the Bin Ladens.
Ah,
so
yeah, but some of the Bin Ladens are goodies, aren't they? I mean, Noah Bin Laden is a goodie, I think.
Are they? Don't know who's a goodie and who's a baddie anymore.
Well, really? That's true. But I think Noah Bin Laden, who lives in Switzerland, I think. I've got to go on the podcast sometimes. I think she's definitely one of us. Osama was as I fondly know him, was a CIA asset. I mean, I think that's... Can I actually, before we go on to other stuff, I've got to ask you. When I was... For most of my life, I've really been into the military. And I always, you know, as Dr. Johnson says, every man thinks meanly of himself for not having been a soldier or gone to sea. And that certainly described me very much. I really wished I'd seen the elephant. I wish I'd smelled cordite. I wish I'd been shot at in anger. And really into World War II. Love hanging out with soldiers. I've got lots of friends, you know, who did it. But for whatever reason, I didn't do it. But in the last 2 years, I've come to realize, actually, no way would I want to be in the military. No way would I want my children to be in the military, because basically you are not kicking sort of foreign ass for your country. You're actually doing it for much darker forces that have nothing to do with the country that you were sold as your proud and sovereign nation when you were growing up and you're being brainwashed at school. I imagine you must have gone through a similar process.
Yeah, I mean, I'm now looking back on it. I actually see the whole of that 15-year period, plus working at Port and Down afterwards for 2 years, was almost like basic training for now. Because, you know, you say, a lot of people say, I wish I was a soldier and stuff like that. But I think, you know, I was supposed to go to Iraq and Afghanistan, Sierra Leone and stuff like that, and see all of this stuff with my own eyes, especially like in Iraq, for example, when just talking to Americans, like, aren't you supposed to be here searching for weapons of mass destruction on $1,000 a day? And they're just like, oh yeah, we're here for a show. You know, and then you stood in a dusty village in Afghanistan where no one's even seen a newspaper, let alone a TV or a phone or anything else like that. And, you know, you're trying to explain to these people why you're there in the first place. And you're like, how is us being here in this village protecting the people in the UK in the streets of London, when there's the only threat that's here is like IEDs on the roadside and booby traps for us troops? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. The Allied troops. So even I was very much in the belief system that like I've meant to see all this with my own eyes.
Yes. I think, do you know what? I feel the same way about my own life, that I've had a very establishment sort of trajectory up until quite recently, you know, public school in Oxford and lots of friends who were politicians, a couple of prime ministers and stuff. So I was quite well in with the establishment, the elites, whatever you want to call them, up to a point. I mean, I think they sensed something within me, which I didn't recognize, but they did, that I wasn't quite going to fit in. I didn't belong. But I'm convinced that, you know, I say to people, I'm on a holy mission from God. And I'm convinced that the reason I was chosen to do that part of my training was to rub shoulders with these people so I can understand them in the way that you understood the world of the military and what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and, you know, the fact you're saying this right now will make sense as well, probably like later on today, the fact that you're saying it to yourself, like you're supposed to be saying it to yourself to confirm that that is the case. You know, and if you think of it in that sense, it makes sense to you. So yeah, absolutely. And it's just like what's happening now. Like everyone, we're going through what I think is an exposure phase. So all of these politicians and all these sectors that are just collapsing all around us is all part of the exposure phase. What people need to see, it doesn't matter the medical status. It's like, holy shit, I don't want to be living in a world where I'm paying £500 a month for my gas and electric and everything else, and just all the food prices going up and threat of this, threat of that, and, you know, 10,000 viruses on the go, you know, and variants. It's like people don't want to live in that world. And to answer your question about earlier about, like, you know, answers of goodness, that there very much is, because I think what we're seeing now is everyone's waking up to this nonsense matrix that they want us to live in, and that have tried so hard to get us in the first place, including all the wars and everything else like that. But to allow, like, you know, a transition into a new world, that everyone will kind of come along because they'll already be in a position where they're like, I don't want to be here. I really want to be here where the good stuff's at. And I think that's what we're seeing now. I think, you know, the negative stuff that we're seeing being put out there, and, you know, they're even talking about like trafficking more and all that kind of stuff, you know, really showing the paedophilia side of things on in the news, almost priming people to be like, Christ, they're all at it. So it's not like a big bang flash, like news story that just makes people go mentally insane. I think we're seeing that in a lot of key areas now. A lot of people saying they're resigning. I saw Fauci's resign in December. It's funny timing that.
I think he was probably going to resign anyway. I mean, look, don't forget the guy's been around since he invented the AIDS crisis. You know, he's got lots of history. he's done his time for the evil ones.
Yeah.
He's going
to. I've gone through three TikTok channels because of that guy.
Sorry?
I've gone through three TikTok channels because of that guy. Anytime I put a video, anything to do with him, it was video deleted. So the account was then deleted.
So he must be in bed with the Chinese Communist Party then, because they kind of own TikTok, don't they?
Yeah. So, same with YouTube. I think behind Tommy Robinson, I might be one of the most censored people in the country at the moment.
You might be, although I think, what's her name? Tate,
Andrew Tate, yeah.
Andrew Tate. I think he's quite blacklisted at the moment. Maybe I'll be joining that soon. So just, I was just reminiscing about this, that like when I was growing up, the sort of person I really hated was, you know, journalist John Pilger. You know, John Pilger kind of daring to suggest that the Americans were the bad guys in the Vietnam War. I was thinking, how dare he? I've seen Platoon. I've seen Apocalypse Now. I know that Charlie don't surf and Charlie's the bad guy. And that these are good wars, because what we're doing is there are these terrorists and communists, and we've got to kill them, because if we don't, they're going to take over the world. I mean, I feel so astonishingly naive to have thought this stuff. But I imagine you to have signed up and joined the military, you must have felt the same way initially.
Oh, it's 100% from day one. Like, as soon as you go into any kind of training, it's like the East is the enemy. And even on larger scale exercises, you're always like, it's always Russia, or unless you're going to somewhere like Afghanistan or Iraq, and obviously the enemy is usually like of that sort of nativeness. But the majority of it is always like Russia's the enemy. And that, which stems back to the Cold War days. I mean, even in the movies, so you've got Rocky and Top Gun, you know, they're very much like real sort of masculine movie, like that makes the Russian look bad on, you know, on every occasion. So even from that whole period, you know, primed the Western male mentality towards the East, like on a grand scale, including the military.
Which actually brings me to an important question. I've got, let's say, lots of friends in the military, and they joined for the best of reasons, you know, patriotism and wanting to test themselves as men, and you know, the things that they want to adventure and they want to lead and et cetera, et cetera. But we know, do we not, that part of that, the training process, is brutalizing you, desensitizing you, above all, training you to obey orders, which means that they've lost the ability to think critically about global affairs. Like Ukraine, for example. I mean, I bet most soldiers imagine that they're going to be, well, heaven forfend, but they might be going out to fight in a pointless war started by NATO, and they'll probably think they're the good guys.
But again, when you're in the military, you're quite institutionalized. You don't really pay attention to what's going on anywhere else in the world, really, or outside. And it was even when, you know, during the whole pandemic, and the amount of people I spoke to were serving, like, couldn't see what was really going on. But then it became obvious why. And, you know, because they were lauded as like heroes within the military for working within the hospitals, carrying out all the testing. Do you know what I mean? So it's like you got all these people that have never been away anywhere, suddenly like lauded as heroes. So again, that's all part of the conditioning. And so yeah, it's quite rife, and it's easy to get sucked into as well, because you feel comfortable and you've got all that security and all that kind of stuff. So it's easy to get wrapped up in it. And I saw it the other evening, a football match, a guy who's towards the end of his career was refereeing a football game, and he was literally speaking to all the players like they were junior soldiers, like literally that whole mannerism, and like love the sound of his own sergeant major voice, like all this kind of stuff. It was just plain to see. So yeah, you know, the institutionalization is a very big thing. So when it comes to even things like the pandemic, you know, a lot of the soldiers were just, you know, didn't even have to be deeply coerced into getting jabs, because they're like, well, just like any other jab that we have every year, Hep A, Hep B boosters and everything else like that. And that was kind of the messaging to a lot of them. So they were just like queuing up, you know, to get their COVID jabs. And then the ones that did say that they didn't want to get it were then like, well, you're not going to be able to go on tour. You won't promote. You're probably not going to get anywhere in your career. You might get kicked out, you know. And it's like that's kind of where that started to go within the military.
Yes. Which is, I mean, I think every institution has been, you know, the church has been captured by the forces of darkness. Obviously, government is now just...
You only have to look at the flags that they put up everywhere.
Exactly. But I'm afraid the military is not an exception. The military is now... I mean, maybe it was ever thus. But the fact is that nobody resisted the compulsory vaccines. I mean, can you imagine anything worse than taking your best fighting men and crippling them with a sort of, not a kill shot necessarily, but a clot shot that could give them myocarditis or whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, it all comes down to like what the agenda would have been. So if it was to lock us down, obviously our own troops on our own streets pointing weapons at our own people wouldn't have happened. So in their eyes, it's easier to get rid of those numbers whilst them still doing a job. And then bring in, I don't know, people on dinghies and from Afghanistan to hotels and clothe them, feed them, water them, train them, which is what we've seen in multiple places around the country.
Ah, now I'm glad you mentioned that, because this is the thing that is making me, of all the things I'm shitting myself about, this is it. That it seems that they are importing fighting men with military haircuts, with a kind of officer bearing, some of them. And it's as if they are preparing for a civil war, and they know that native British troops will not fire on their own people, so that they're importing mercenaries. Is that what you're thinking?
Along the lines, yeah, but I think this goes further back to sort of like when ISIS was created. To obviously displace all the refugees across Syria, which then obviously went all through Europe. And it was, funny enough, the same countries, Germany, Hungary, France, UK, that said, oh, we're opening up all our doors to all of them, Sweden. And now Sweden's the rape capital of Europe.
Yes.
But like you look at the pictures of the so-called refugees that are coming across the water, all we're seeing is photos of them literally about to get off the boat, already at the dock, and they're all fighting age males in decent clothing, all wearing masks, so you don't see the faces. So that should bring alarm bells straight away.
So it's
a mixture of that, plus the obviously like an influx of refugees from Syria and everywhere else like that over the last, what was it, 7-8 years that's been going on, as well as like more recently Afghanistan and stuff like that, and they're just kind of like piling in. I mean, there's a lot of thesis behind if there was to be lockdown and stuff like that, be used as mercenaries, or if from a good perspective, if we went into like a martial law for whatever reason, you know, they would be used as extra officers, if you know what I mean. So I'm yet to see any proof either way, but we know that there's so many red flags between how many have come over and they're all of fighting age. They're all being put up in hotels. They're all going through some kind of training. That in itself should, you know, alarm people.
Tell me about this. I didn't know that detail. The some kind of training. What? How do we know about this?
Well, it's just it was sort of information that was passed down to a number of veterans actually, who I'd imagine have been monitoring it. from people that worked in these hotels to say that like there was a lot of they're all fighting age, young guys, all being kitted out, new trainers. They use the gym in the morning, three meals a day, and they're getting taken off in the mornings to do some kind of training somewhere. That's all that they were told. Up northwest, I think it was.
Right.
But again, that's all the information I have. Like, it's not something I've kind of, you know, elaborated on any further to make it some kind of conspiracy. Like, that's just the information that was provided. But having been in places like Bournemouth and stuff like that, and seeing, like, even just seeing groups of fighting age males from the same place, just stood outside talking amongst yourselves. You know, I've seen that with my own eyes as well, just down in Bournemouth. So, you know, there's lots of groups and lots of places around the country.
Yeah. So this is, I mean, look, if this is happening, and it sounds like it is, there must be people complicit in this who really are, well, number one, betraying the ordinary people in their country that they're supposed to be serving. Because, I mean, I'm sure that there must be high-level military knowledge of what's going on. There must be, I mean, do you think that Carlton Smith, for example, doesn't know about this? I mean, you know, ex-SAS, he's supposed to be...
I'd imagine there's a lot of people know about a lot of things that are going on that's far outweighs anything that knowledge that we have. You know, we're seeing what we see with our own eyes. You know,
but we're the good guys. I mean, I'm talking about the people who are clearly not who are kind of enabling this kind of stuff. I mean, we disapprove of it, but
I think there's I'd imagine there's a list of some sort of people who are orchestrating that in the background, but the good guys are aware of, and will, I'd imagine, or I'd like to think, would act accordingly. You know, I think that there's a lot of good stuff happening in the background, like especially community level, that's, you know, kind of exposing a lot of all the, like, even the local MPs and the local councillors and how they've been, you know, fraudulently doing things as well within their own sort of councils as well. So that I'm seeing that on a massive scale now. And, you know, from traveling around the country doing talks and like being very active in the local communities and community assemblies as an observer, and within PHA as well, People's Health Alliance, which is, you know, growing by the day. So I'm seeing all of this stuff now happening around the country, sort of like almost like this fight back. And, you know, there's people challenging their councils, challenging their councillors, like, where's all this money come from? And, you know, it's people are being made accountable for it. I think there's a guy down in Bournemouth has just been done for like 10 or 11 million pounds worth of fraud. So, you know, from an accountability aspect in all of this nonsense that's gone over the last few years, like, we are starting to see things happen.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, for these, doesn't it require a functioning, honest judicial system for these people to be brought to justice? I mean, isn't that part of the problem?
I'd say it's a massive part of the problem. And the thing is that I did a really good podcast with Mark Horn from Peacekeepers about all of this, you know, about our rights and equity law, common law, stuff like that. And obviously the judiciary system. And, you know, he echoed the fact that we've got like an amazing law system, like we actually do, but it's just like how it's managed and governed is the problem. So, you know, all the law, it's all there. It just needs to be, you know, rolled out in a honest and trustworthy way. And I think that's potentially what hopefully we'll start seeing over the next few months, is like actual honest cases getting put through, you know, for a number of things.
Yeah.
I know like people like Peacekeepers and Mark Horn, you know, obviously having a lot of success with the council taxes and stuff like that, they're representing people and challenging all of the councils. So, you know, it's working in that aspect. Obviously, from a Crown Court level, I guess only time will tell if any arrests are ever made within, you know, of certain individuals for, I don't know, crimes against humanity or whatever the charges may be, what the alleged charges are of these people that have been within power or so-called power over 67 million people the last few years.
Yeah. I used to think that, you know, English common law was the envy of the world, and that's why people like to do business here and stuff. And then I went to a few of Tommy Robinson's court cases, and I realized that these kind of Oxbridge educated people, you know, people like me, I mean, you know, actually one of the guys who was representing the state in a Tommy Robinson trial had been a friend of mine from Oxford, you know, a lovely, lovely, lovely bloke. You know, I mean, really sweet. I never imagined he'd become a kind of badass barrister for a corrupt state, but he had. And I saw the opposite of the workings of justice. I saw the workings of injustice. I saw a whole system which is, well, just not being fair, not doing all the things that you would expect you'd hope that the justice system would do.
We've got the issue of but you got the issue of the whole legal and legalese system as well, which people just don't know about. So it's obviously like two totally separate languages, you know, which is why we get caught out with everything, you know, like or summons for court doesn't mean you have to go. It's just an invite, for example. It's you know, there's so many things in there which, because of our conditioning again, you know, we've been brought up to believe you know you must do this, you must do that. Oh, it's a crime if you don't pay your electricity bill. It's obviously not criminal at all.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I've got a Telegram channel, and there is fierce debate. You know, I mean, everyone's pretty much down the rabbit hole, but there is fierce debate among people over this issue of English common law, and you know, when the police say to you, "Do you understand?" and then you don't say, you know, and
overstand.
Yeah, all these things you're supposed to say, and some people say this is complete bollocks. This is just a trap. This is designed to, not a deliberate trap, but it fools people into thinking that they have a power they don't have. And actually, when they try these tricks, they're just going to find themselves having a massively increased fine, or they're going to be got. And other people are saying, no, this is absolutely the thing. This is the way forward. You've obviously formed the view that we can get round the system by applying the old principle.
Obviously, use the term lightly, the system, quote unquote. It's I think deep down, from my experience, I've been dealing with it a lot myself recently, especially to do with like cars being clamped and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, dealing with bailiffs, gas companies, and all this kind of stuff. It's so I've kind of been through the system myself to kind of see what lessons you learn, basically.
Yeah.
And I guess the biggest one I've learned, and from obviously doing podcasts with people like Mark, and then there's you've got people like Peter Stone, the Sovereign Project. You learn loads off those guys as well, and loads of other people. So, and then when you put it into action as well yourself, you soon realise, you know, what rights you kind of do have, where the power is, but also where's the actual obligation, and that's what it's all about. It's like they need to show you why, you know, you've done something wrong, or you've committed a crime, or that you're actually in the wrong and that you do owe this money. You know, there has to be some kind of substance to it initially,
right?
And which a lot of time never is. So in regards to the utility companies, for example, it's just the obligations on them to prove to you that they are not a credit broker. They are actually supplying you with gas and electric, which they can never prove that, because they never provide you with gas and electric. It comes from the national grid, and they just basically rent your meters in your house, charge you 8% for their fees, and 92% of your money goes on to the government. So they're all billing companies. That's literally it. So straight away, your direct debit, if you have one with them, is null and void, because they do not supply you with gas and electric. So again, the onus is on them to prove that. If not, then you just withhold your payments until they can prove otherwise. So you're not denying, you're not refusing to pay, you know, because that in itself is, you're acknowledging there's something to pay. So it's all, you know, it's about lawfully, peacefully, until they can actually prove to you that they are not a credit broker and they actually supply you with the gas and electric as per your direct debit agreement, the contract's void straight away.
So are you saying that they're obliged to carry on supplying you with electricity even if you don't pay the bills?
Yeah, because they're not supplying it to you. The national grid are. So if I just terminated any contract tomorrow and argued with them for a year, you know, whether I thought they were good or not, and so I'd still be getting gas and electric to my house.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, how long would this go on for, though, before you did get cut off?
Well, I don't know.
Are you saying you don't pay for your utilities at all? I'm saying
I'm withholding my payments until the utilities company can prove to me that they are not a credit broker and they are in fact supplying my gas and electric.
Nice one. Well, that's going to come in handy this winter when we're going to get the most terrible, massive increases in prices, which have all been deliberately engineered, haven't they? I mean, it's not.
Yeah, but I think this is part of the exposure phase. Again, it's just like, although it looks really bad and it's like really negative and it's, oh my God, how am I going to afford to eat this Christmas? Which you should never be in a mindset of. It's like, well, you eat. Don't worry about electricity bill. I've just told you you'll still be getting gas and electric. Don't worry. Yeah. Always choose to eat. It just being put into that pressurized mentality of that's what it might look like is enough to show you don't want to be in this world. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think they're doing a good job of that, because if you think deep down, like from a deep state level, they've got no money. Like, you know, all the gold's been taken. They just, everything's being seized. So the only way they can try and claw stuff back is by putting all the tax up on everything, which includes fuel prices, which includes food, which includes energy companies. Whilst the energy companies are actively showing us to our faces how much profit they're making. So again, this is how they're making, clawing some money back, because they've got no access to money. So if you just think it from that sense, that tap's going to run dry soon. And it'll be the people that sort of squeeze the tap.
What did you mean? What do you mean about they've had all their gold taken? Who's they? Who's taken it?
Well, if you're looking at like from central banks, you know, the Bank of England, just, you know, look it up online. Like, has it been operating for the last 2 years? You'll find your answer. You know, in terms of all the gold and that, like from the Vatican and all that, those kind of areas. If you think about it, like their kitty that they've been using.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've just been printing money for fun, same for furlough, which, you know, they obviously clearly needed to for furlough anyway to keep people happy. But obviously, that kitty just runs dry if all their assets are being seized all over the world, you know, through, I don't know, executive orders from America, stuff like that. And they need to claw money back somehow. Same as similar with Ukraine, right? Because obviously there's a lot of corruption going on in Ukraine, isn't there?
Yeah.
So it's a very similar concept. So imagine that all those same characters have all got invested interest in Ukraine. But because Putin and whoever seized all the assets of these people within Ukraine, the quickest and easiest way to make some money back is go, make some charities. Everyone sponsors this charity, all funding for Ukraine, sponsor an orphan, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it's the same trend all the time around the world. Whatever happens, you can clearly see that everything's being drained from them, and they're having to resort to all this stuff to try and claw some kind of funding back.
Did you see in the Mirror quite recently, supposedly the army's most senior warrant officer said that soldiers need to prepare for combat in Ukraine. I can't make up my mind whether the whole Ukraine thing is, you know, this sort of building up of first the blue and yellow flag propaganda and all the kind of the lies you get in the newspaper about Russian, well, the one-sided version of events you say you get in the newspapers, whether this is just designed to put us on a state of alert, or whether they are really that crazy that they want to cover up their tracks, all their kind of misdemeanors over the last year by by resorting to war. I mean, how likely do you think it is that we're going to end up going to war with over Ukraine?
I don't think it's very likely at all. And that's just my personal beliefs. You know, other people might think completely different. I don't think we will at all. I don't think we're equipped enough. I mean, even if you took the numbers that we did have and you dwindled it down to the ones that have to stay, you know, local in training regiments and everywhere else like that, you know, and then what you're left with in terms of fit battalions and battle groups and all the rest of it, I don't think it would be nowhere near enough. I just don't think it would happen at all, personally. I think right. I think it's almost like a scare tactic. You know, it's a good way to keep your troops motivated.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, by wanting to be alert and, you know, be a proud soldier. That's a good way of doing that. And it's a good way, again, of like just propaganda. That's what you're putting out in your papers here, you know, because you know it's going to be seen or reported to back over there. That's, again, that's just a given. But it's just priming people, isn't it? It's all in the messaging, like you just said about the colours of the flag as well. You know, it's all about that NLP tactics on people they don't even realise. And, you know, people, not necessarily to level, but there's a lot of people now understanding that this has been a military grade psychological operation on, you know, humankind. And when people get that, it's a lot of things are clearer to see. To answer your question, I don't think there'll be any boots on the ground there at all.
That's definitely a relief, because I can't think of anything more insane than going to war for the deep state, for what Victoria Nuland and her, you know, ancestral reasons to fight.
Well, the good thing is, I think, is that, like, I was out of the military like when the whole pandemic thing started, and obviously I saw what it was very early on. Obviously a lot of people inside didn't, a lot of people who veterans didn't. However, like this whole thing has woken up like hundreds of thousands, millions of people around the whole world, and it will include people who are currently serving, will be questioning, you know, and there's never been a time ever in history where on like Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, you know, all those channels, the people are young people as well, are, you know, doing these memes or these 3-minute video clips explaining like the deeper, darker details of all of this.
Yeah.
And people in the military can see that. So the whole time I was in the military, there was no talk of any of this. It was literally David Icke had said that the Queen could possibly be reptilian, right?
Yeah.
That was literally as far as it went. Whereas like now we're in this whole period where it's just like Tartarian history, giants, it's like the royal family is this, like Rothschilds, yeah, and it's like just massive explosion of information. So, and people in the military are going to see all that. So, you know, on top of how they feel about the whole jab situation, you know, so, you know, I get a lot of messages from a lot of guys in the military. I have done over the last couple of years, you know, everything from being really angry about being coerced to what they're actually seeing with their own eyes in terms of like people's health and fitness and, you know, never seen mates having heart attacks and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think from a military perspective, I don't think there'll be anything
that's interesting. In Ukraine, have you heard of lots of cases of things like myocarditis from people who've had the jab in the military?
Yeah, again, you only have to like type into Google like sudden death soldier, and you'll see reports from the last year or so of soldiers that have like had sudden death, you know, within their barracks, unexplained. You know, but again, you can't. You know, you can't stand and go, it was because of this, it was because of that. I personally know 3 males who've had heart attacks under 40 in the military. I know 11 in total, you know, and subsequent myocarditis. So, and we've had people actively DM in the show who are, of, you know, in command positions as well, that have been really upset about the pressure that's being put on them to put their troops through the vaccination program.
When you say command position, you know, like, what rank are you talking about? What sort of colonel or lieutenant?
From like warrant officers, warrant officers upwards, you know, and it's really worried about the whole process, and obviously clearly was very upset about it themselves to make that or send that message in the first place.
Yeah.
So I think that initially we seek legal advice because they were like, wanted to seek legal action against their superiors, whoever they were. But yeah, we've had a lot of messages from people throughout all the services over the last like year and a half, not just to myself, but to a lot of the guys I do stuff with.
I'll give you that. Are you next week? Okay. Yeah. So, right. That's good to know, because look, when it comes down to it, here's the worry. It's clear to me that what we know of the people who really run the world, they are psychopaths. They hate us. They think we are cattle. We're useless eaters. They want to exterminate a lot of us because there are too many of us. They practice divide and rule. They practice problem, reaction, solution. And one of the things they're clearly steering us towards is mass civil unrest, which they can then clamp down on, and they can send in those mercenaries that we've talked about earlier. How do we fight back without enabling them to do what they want to do?
Everything's got to be everything's got to be legally and lawfully done, you know, and peacefully. There's no need to really carry out any violence of any sort. You know, it's all about numbers. It's all about people coming together, understanding what their internal innate powers are themselves, and then as a collective. And that's why there's so many good things happening right now, which are making waves, like People's Health Alliance and even PFFA, which has just started to do the farming side of stuff. You know, there's all these community assemblies that are starting up all around the south of England. You know, we've got the Bournemouth Community Assembly now, the new Salisbury one, you've got Ringwood. There's a lot of really good things happening from a community level upwards, because that's how people want to see the world running, from grassroots level upwards. So, you know, by the people, for the people. So that in itself, you know, already making great waves. So I think as that starts accelerating, which I'm seeing it in my own eyes, I think it's only bringing positive change and positive thoughts to everybody, you know. So I think personally, I think we need to steer away from all the, or any of the fear-based stuff, you know, unless it's really legitimate, like very likely going to happen. So, I mean, I talk about even things like, you know, chemtrails and masks and like all this stuff. It's like, that's great, you know, as a form of exposure, but we don't need to keep harping on about it all the time, because it's like, well, show me exactly what's in that chemtrail that's gone over my house. Can you tell me? Well, no, you can't. Can you? Is it good? You don't know, you know, because there's a lot of talk either way. So it's like, if we leave that fear-based stuff there and concentrating on like where we want to go, you know, within the community setting and within the actual world we want to live in, that's like so much better time spent, you know, than we're constantly putting out all this fear-based content that I was seeing, you know, a lot of people still doing, you know, 5G this and chemtrail this. And, you know, it's good for an exposure side of things, because it is helping people go, oh, right, yeah, that doesn't seem right. They aren't clouds, which is great. And then they ask more questions. But I think if we just focus on those areas all the time and not like for the good times to come, I think we can get trapped in that, you know what I mean, that low vibration sort of like fear state.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well, my view is that there's room for both. And actually, I think that it's important to keep talking about stuff like the chemtrails and 5G and stuff, because repetition means that you're constantly reaching a wider audience. And let's face it, people are not going to, until people understand the scale of the deception and the scale of the problems facing us, they're not going to wake up and start thinking about things like alternative society. I mean, I the vision I had at the Hope Festival of how things can be, it was like amazing. It was like going into the Garden of Eden before the fall. And realizing, yeah, we all want to get on. We all want to, you know, what I loved about the Hope Festival is you could say anything. And instead, I'll just give you an example of this. So I was hearing two people talking about fracking and how evil fracking was and yada, yada, yada. And I said, actually, you know what? I'm a massive fan of fracking. I think fracking is really good. And instead of going, as most people in the green movement would. What, you're in the pay of big oil, you're evil, you're, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. They said, really? That's interesting. Tell me more. And I thought, we've developed this thanks to organizations like the BBC, which encourages this sort of adversarial, you know, we've got James Dellingpole and we've got this insane greenie. We're going to put them in the studio and they're going to generate lots of heat and no light. You can say anything you like and just express yourself and not be judged. You know, people are interested and people are open. And so I get all that. But in the meantime, we've got a lot of bad stuff to negotiate coming our way, haven't we? We've got, this winter is going to be grim. We've got food shortages. We've got energy shortages. I think they're going to probably ration fuel. How are we going to cope? Because I know that there are communities, there are grassroots communities, but how is that going to work?
I think people need to, like you say, kind of still wake up to like what's going on, rather than it be a big smack in the mouth, like suddenly food shortages, energy bills up all at the same time. Although that in itself will probably wake a lot of people up.
You know what they're going to do? But they're going to demand the government does something, which of course is exactly what we don't want. Because I saw the front page. Unfortunately, my wife still insists on having newspapers. I think they are poison. So I'm looking at the Mail on Sunday, and the headline was something like, there is a plan to sort out the cost of living crisis. You know, the government has a solution. And I'm thinking, hang on a second. The government created this problem in the first place with your blessing, Mail on Sunday. And now here you are proposing a solution, which is presumably going to involve more money printing, more government intervention, more, you know, prominence for the very organizations which have caused this problem. So that's going to be the hard part to negotiate, isn't it? It's like persuading people that government is not the solution, that local groups are and local farmers and stuff.
Yeah, but I see that's the way things go. I personally see that's the way it will go, you know, because, you know, what's being started is already being mirrored in Australia, America, Canada, New Zealand, the countries that have really been affected. And it's literally, you know, if you take government away and you have everything sort of locally run, obviously that would, where that would be decided obviously later, but from the grassroots up. So maybe if you had a steering group that was, you know, voted on or carried out policy. So the people vote on policy, not people. And the steering group kind of drive the policy for that whole area. That's how I personally see things in the not too distant future. And not so much a government, which is just top heavy, you know, that prime minister, ministers, cabinet, all the rest of it, because that's just mirrored in every sector, whether it's the military, the police, corporate. And that's why we're in this situation we're in. We're almost like primed to be in these pyramids and we're at the bottom.
Do you think, I we'll have to do another podcast because I've got another podcast like shortly. I'm really cramming them in today and I've got to eat some lunch before I do it, otherwise I'll go mad. I put aside this steak because I need meat to, we all need meat, don't we? But let me ask you a last question, which is, people like me, you know, I'm not very strong. So I'm not going to be one of the people who's going to be particularly good at, you know, fighting the bad guys. And the military and the police, do you have any faith these people will do the right thing, or have they been brainwashed into subservience?
I think they'll do the right thing. I think just in, you know, I've spoken to a lot of them on, you know, from the police and the military. And every time I speak to a police officer, whether it's in London or Dorset or something like that, you know straight away they know stuff's not right. They know there's a lot of things at their top ends that's very corrupt. You know, they just know this stuff going on. And the longer this is drawn out, they're now looking back going, yeah, I really think the whole COVID thing was like complete setup. And majority of police officers I speak to like know that. So again, it's just a case of like, what does that number look like on a national scale of people think like that? But I think it became down to it. No, I just don't see it like them. I see them very much being on our side and understanding that they work for us.
You're quite a reassuring presence, AJ. You do seem to be. I mean, you know, I often see you smiling, which is always a nice thing, and you seem calm, and that is good. That's what we need at times like this. We need people like you. So thank you.
Well, yeah, no, you're absolutely welcome. And it's just, you know, if that's a message of hope to people, then, you know, I'm really happy by that, because that's what I'm trying to promote, is that we need to stay away from like the fear state beings that we've been and suppressed as for, well, pretty much as we were born. You know, I was saying on a podcast recently, we go to school at 4 years, 5 years old with 100% confidence and 0% fear. Mm-hmm. And then we come out at 16 with like hardly any confidence and just loads of fear, not knowing what's going on. And because we've just basically shoved this indoctrination process, made to feel inadequate, made, you know, lots of self-doubt drawn into you. And that's obviously, that affects everybody all the way through their lives. So adulthood's a complete mess. And you do rely on the governments, which is why we're in the mess we're in. But there's a lot of good people doing a lot of good things in the background to take us into this new pleasant world that everyone wants to live in and shares and loves each other and, you know, and lifts each other up. Like that's where people want to be going.
Yeah, it's almost like it's part of a divine plan, because I sometimes mention that one of my favorite lines in the Bible is where Jesus, I think quoting one of the Old Testament verses, he says, "Physician, heal thyself." And this is a secret that we've lost largely culturally because of the influences of things like the Flexner Report and the way that the Rockefellers hijacked medicine in the early 20th century. And we don't realize that so many of the old ways, the ways that we used to kind of the herbal methods and the you know sort of things that we associate with witches are actually much better for our health than pharmaceutical products. Things like that.
Yeah. It's just getting out of these little mentalities, isn't it, really? It's you know, like I've been a sucker for it from the past. I've had bad injuries and stuff, and I've had spinal surgery, and I was on anti-inflammatories and tramadol and everything for a long time, and I ended up like with addictions to opiates, you know, on a couple of occasions because of, you know, thinking, oh, I need it to mask the pain. But the reality is, even as a headache level, you know, you don't, your body's not deficient aspirin, but yet we always reach for it to try and fix the headache. When we are our best healers. You know, you just got to understand or start relearning what innate powers you actually have and how we can heal ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. AJ, it's been really lovely having you on the Delling Pod. And tell us, well, I
it's a pleasure.
Google AJ Roberts Show, we'll be able to find you.
Yeah, I'm not on YouTube because I've had 3 channels taken down, taken off Twitter. I'm pretty shadow banned on Instagram, but the AJ Roberts Show on Instagram and on Facebook, where you'll find all my podcasts somehow still there, although I'm banned. Rumble is where all my actual video podcasts are, as well as obviously Apple, Spotify, all the rest of it.
And are you on Getter?
Oh yes, I am on Getter. Yeah, I'm going to use that a lot more often now. I started using Truth Social, but I'm still kind of working my way around that at the minute. It's fairly new, isn't it? But I've also got my own Insiders World, insiders-world.com, where I'm building this great community of people, and we do like weekly online calls, and I've run programs in there, and even meditations and all that kind of stuff. So if anyone ever wants to check that out.
Hello, I'll call you back in 1 minute. I'm just finishing a podcast, darling. Okay, bye. Children. Yeah. Anyway.
That's insiders-world.com for anyone who's interested.
That sounds good. So you're building a community of lovely, lovely people.
And they're all helping each other out with loads of stuff, like especially through utilities and things like that. It's really great.
Brilliant. Well, okay. Well, I will put that at the bottom of the blurb that goes on the bottom of the film. So AJ, thank you very much, and I loved talking to you. And may I remind my many many viewers and listeners, I really appreciate your support on Subscribestar, Patreon, Locals, and Substack. Thank you very much, and thank you, AJ. Speak soon.
Absolutely welcome. My pleasure. Take care. Okay.